Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable!
Mayweather makes a pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact, I'm the best, you know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 173 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. A lot of news happening in the world of boxing during the last couple of days, especially since the last time we delivered a new episode for you guys last week. A lot of stuff, not only fights to preview and to review and all that good stuff, but a lot of international stuff, the Kinahan news and you know, Bob Arum comments and Tyson Fury comments. And it's been crazy, man. It's been crazy. Boxing Twitter, especially boxing Twitter, has been doing their detective work. I'm impressed. There's some of these accounts, even though we don't know who they are, they do some pretty impressive stuff. But we'll touch on all that stuff a little later. Jumping right back into it, fight reviews. This past Saturday, the 16th of April, from the Manchester Arena in Manchester on DAZN, Conor Benn gets the second round TKO over Chris Van Heerden. This was for the WBA Continental Welterweight title. I'm going to come out and say it. I think Britain or England has, I think, a solid welterweight to compete maybe with the others in the United States. I think Benn, that power is kind of crazy. How he was swinging. I mean, like, there's some certain things he kind of has holes in, but I was impressed. I think he did what he needed to do, and he got Chris Van Heerden there out quickly. I mean, Van Heerden's been around for a long time. I think it would have been kind of like a negative type of criticism for Conor Benn if he went like 12 rounds with this guy. Or even if it took him like 10, 11 rounds to stop him. He made quick work of the night. He stopped him in the second round. Hey, man, can I go as far as to say that Conor Benn is the real deal, or have we not crossed that bridge yet?
I would say it's a little bit premature, because Conor Benn, he did like the Anthony Yard thing where he kind of just completely skipped the British scene. And, you know, he kind of worked his way through like your journeyman, and then he kind of went up to like kind of like a gatekeeper status. And now he's fighting names who are on the other side of the hill. You know, he's never fought somebody that's in their prime like, you know, I would say he is. So you never really get to see, you know, like how good he actually is. You know, he's never fought. Let's have a look who's in his weight category in the UK. Michael McKinson, Chris Congo, you know, Essuman. He's supposed to fight Chris Jenkins, and then, depending on who you believe, Frank Warren or Eddie Hearn, you know, somebody kept somebody from each other. I remember Eddie saying that he offered, you know, Frank, you know, game-changing money for someone like Chris Jenkins, and Frank turned it down because he didn't want him to fight on a Matchroom show. So, depending on who you believe. So, I do think it is a little bit premature. You know, he is getting rid of the people he should get rid of. You know, he didn't go 12 rounds of Chris Van Heerden. He saw the opening and just jumped on it, you know, and put him away, which is, you know, that's a box ticked. You know, he's doing what he should do. But I'd like to see him in there with somebody that's, you know, on the boil like he is, you know, somebody that's, you know, peaking and, you know, somebody that can box, somebody that can actually, you know, put a little bit of pressure on Conor, and somebody that, you know, that, you know, hits hard. Because I may be wrong, but I think most of the people he's fought so far have been kind of like feather fisted, and which makes it easy for Conor to come forward, just pressurize him, and, you know, he gets him out of there. So I think time will tell. You know, they're still looking for, you know, people are still shouting that he should fight, you know, David Avanesian, but Eddie and, you know, Conor are saying like, well, why should we? What does he bring to the table? You know, I'm giving him a big bite, a big paycheck, and, you know, a WBA Continental title. What does Avanesian bring? Like, why should I do that? You know, it's one of the things when you're coming up the ladder, no one's going to give you the chance. So when you're up there, why should you give them the chance? Really? You know, it's one of those things. It's you're all fighting for the same bag of money, essentially, aren't you? So, like, why would you open it up and give someone that chance? Make them you know, become like a mandatory or something like that. So it is interesting because, you know, Eddie always gives like a list of fighters, and normally the weakest of the bunch is the one that kind of ends up fighting next. So, you know, when he says people like Broner, and I'm trying to think who else did he mention this time? You know, Robert Guerrero luckily wasn't there this time. I think, was it Victor Ortiz? Victor Ortiz was maybe in the shake again. So
Victor Ortiz, oh, come on.
Yeah, because I think they're trying to get him now, I think, because he's, you know, he's doing decent numbers in the UK. So I think they're trying to, you know, cross over the pond and see if, you know, they could get Conor Benn a bit of a bigger name over this side. So I could see a Victor Ortiz, what's he been doing? Nothing, really. So drag him off the couch, I guess. You fought Robert Guerrero, lost that fight. But for some reason, it doesn't look like Guerrero is going to be the one. I think Kell Brook's priced himself out. Obviously, Amir Khan was pulled into the ring, and Amir Khan looked kind of shocked, and he kind of like stumbled on his words, didn't he, when they were kind of asked him, you know, does he want the fight? And he was like, well, you know, we'll see what's going to happen later in the year.
Isn't that crazy, though? Like, they still look at Khan as valuable. I mean, he still is valuable, but like, they brought him into the ring and he's coming off a loss against another, like a Kell Brook, where Khan just didn't look like anything of his old self. Like, he sucked. And they bring him in there. They strategically plan to bring him in the ring to ask him about a potential fight with Conor Benn, because from a business perspective, hey, you put him against somebody with the stock of Khan, bringing in the money, the business side, the eyeballs, even though Conor Benn should be the favorite. I mean, you would expect him to be the favorite, especially after Khan's last performance. But Khan's still there, man. Khan's still there. Like, I guarantee you that if Conor Benn had, like, Eddie Hearn had a choice, like, if Kell Brook and Khan said, yeah, we'll take the fight, I honestly think they would go for Amir Khan.
Yeah. I mean, it would sell, because Amir Khan kind of, you know, like, really opened himself up to the UK fans when, you know, he did so well at the Olympics and then he turned pro. And Khan's never really lived off the fact that he had an O, because he lost that early on. And he kind of really grew in the eyes of the public, because I think he was like 16 years old when he went to the Olympics. So we all knew him as a kid. So we kind of watched him all growing up, and he was just a super nice guy. And he went into the, have you ever heard of the Celebrity in the Jungle that they do in the UK?
I haven't, no.
Where they get like these celebrities and they put them in the jungle and they have to do all these different tasks. It's a reality TV show. So Khan went on there. And I think, like, you know, the average person that doesn't follow boxing, but they kind of knew who Khan was because of the Olympics, he won their hearts over because he was just such a nice, sweet guy. So he has such a huge appeal. And then he obviously draws a lot of fans, you know, in the Middle East and stuff like that, you know, due to his, you know, where he's from. And then obviously his religion and stuff like that. So he just crosses so many boxes. And then he's huge over here. Like, if you ever go to a fight, Khan's there in the crowd, he's swamped. So, like, he really just ticks so many boxes. So,
What really put him, before you continue, what really helped his stock over here in the United States is when he fought Canelo. When Canelo and Golden Boy picked him as the opponent, and they had him at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, and the T-Mobile Arena was pretty brand new at that time. That really helped his U.S. profile big time. After that, you're right. We've seen it when he's in the crowd over here in U.S.-based fights, and American fans go up to him, like, oh, Khan, like, yelling his name. You're right. Like, and there's not that many fighters that you could say that for. You can't.
Why do you think it was the fact that he was winning and then got dramatically knocked out? Like, what do you think won the fans over here? Because he lost that fight.
Well, I think it's more like, I don't think the fans, obviously we're speculating, but I don't think the fans blamed him for taking the fight. I think they gave him credit because they knew Canelo's a bigger guy.
Because he moved up.
Yes. And at that time, Khan could have probably made 140 still. Who knows? But it was more Canelo getting criticism. Like, hey, you're fighting a guy who's fighting at 140, 147, you know, and you're pretty much a middleweight at that time, at least. But Khan was asked, like, he wasn't getting any criticism because he's like, yeah, I'm going to take a, it's a legacy fight for him. He's fighting the one, you know, the best fighter in the world that, you know, who still is. So that loss to Canelo has held up well, like any loss to any of these great fighters. And before he got knocked out, he got knocked out nasty. It was a nasty knockout. Khan was actually doing pretty well. His speed was his X factor for those rounds. Because there was a couple rounds that he arguably won.
Do you know we say that? I can't remember. Can you remember? Was he officially ahead on the scorecards? I think he was with the
fans. I don't remember either. I really don't. I just remember that he was getting some good shots in because he was quicker. And there was a couple of times where he caught Canelo with some good shots. It wasn't really any like big powerful shots. Khan never really had the power to hurt him, but he had the speed to kind of catch him off balance in a way. But Canelo obviously trained for that. And if you really watch how strategic he was, he went to the body to kind of turn Khan as the rounds came. And then Khan, he set up like that overhand right, which was very, very, very nice. It was sweet boxing skills, to study if you want to be an up and coming boxer. But, and I mean, like, it's not like Khan got blew out. I mean, like, he got obviously knocked out, but up until that point, he was doing okay. He was doing okay.
He really is an anomaly, isn't he? Like,
he's polarizing. That's what it is. He's polarizing. That's why, going back to our initial point, Conor Benn and Eddie Hearn, like, I'm telling you, even if Kell Brook stepped up and he's like, I'll take the fight, and Khan is like, oh no, I'll take the fight, they probably would go the Khan route, even though Khan is coming off a loss.
But it massively more in pay-per-views. So much more money in pay-per-views if they chose Khan over Kell Brook.
And it's crazy because Khan looked like crap against Brook. He looked like shit.
Like, if you were Khan, you'd like take what, another $5 million? Like, you'd probably get knocked out, but do you just take $5 million and then just ride off into the sunset? Or is it does it damage your legacy that the last part of your career is going to be, you know, schooled and beaten up by Kell Brook, or, you know, close rival that you've, you know, wanted to shut each other's mouths for so many years, and then you find Conor Brook and get knocked out?
Do you think Ryan Garcia can be an Amir Khan, polarizing like that, where he ends up getting some losses, when the losses he gets like knocked out, and it's crazy, but he's so popular and so, you know, from the business side of the sport, he keeps getting big fights, and people like to keep watching him because it's polarizing. Do you think Ryan? I don't know why that popped into my head, but I feel like I might have mentioned that before. I think Ryan Garcia could be like an Amir Khan.
I would say yes, but in a different way, because Khan attracts a lot of people because he's such a super nice guy, and people just kind of, and he's either wins in quite a flamboyant way or gets knocked out in a very dramatic way. Ryan just seems to have this digital footprint, like we were talking about earlier today.
I'm talking about like years down the line, though.
It's hard for me to say, because Ryan is not, like, when you hear him talk, he's not a great talker, and you don't really warm to him. Like, sometimes I struggle to understand what he's saying. He's not.
Right.
With like maturity and media training, like, he'll come across like that. But Amir's like, he just seems like so genuine. You know, it's just different. You don't take to him like you do. Like, listening to Anthony Joshua, like, now I listen to him and I think, this isn't you. This is all scripted. This is something that you've memorized and you're repeating. Where Khan, it looks like he just says it because it's from the heart. Obviously, some of it's probably media trained. Like, he knows what to say.
Yeah.
But he still like comes across as. Yeah, it comes across as, you know, very genuine. So, I mean, Ryan's probably bigger in terms of, like, you know, if you watched a replay on DAZN of his last fight, that probably got more views than Amir Khan v. Kell Brook. But in terms of putting bums in seats and stuff like that and selling tickets and stuff, like, you know, Ryan could get there, but I think it would be in a different kind of way, like a different selection of fans.
Maybe. I just think, I mean, obviously, Ryan's young, so, you know, time will tell. But, you know, going back to obviously the Conor Benn situation, ideally, who would you put him up against next coming off this win?
Are you asking like in a business sense or just in a boxing sense?
Well, give me both. Give me a business sense and then give me a boxing sense.
Like in a business sense, I think the Amir Khan fight is good for him. You know, it's
you think it's realistic. Do you think it's realistic though?
You got to think, what options does Amir have? The Kell Brook rematch, like really, like unless there was something like an injury going into the last fight, which made him so poor, and Amir knows that, then maybe. But if that was him at like 100%, then he's, you know, massively not the Amir Khan that he was before. You know, he relied so much on speed. And obviously, as time goes on, that's one of the first things to disappear. So,
right.
I would say Amir, if you're just looking for a business sense to grow his, you know, worldwide reputation, and in a boxing sense, I think it maybe taking the David Avanesian fight just to show people, like, you know what, like you keep saying I'm ducking this guy, you know, he's obviously highly ranked in the WBO and I think the WBC.
Why not Virgil?
Problem is, we don't know what Virgil's doing now. Is Virgil moving up?
Virgil has to wait for Crawford and Spence. Crawford's not going to fight Virgil before he gets a Spence fight. If Crawford fights before the Spence fight later on this year, which we're expecting, Crawford's going to fight a guy, I'm expecting, who he knows, like, okay, I should take care of this guy so I can keep that Spence fight on the table. And Virgil Ortiz is way too much of a threat.
But we don't know whether he's moving up because of that. He had to call his last fight off, didn't he, due to the stomach thing? And people were saying it's, you know, him.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, that's a good point. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, but I mean, like, Virgil's gonna have to wait until at least next year to get a title shot.
Well, that's just the tough thing, isn't it? About that, when a division, when you've got like, it is good that we all want to see an undisputed, right? But then that ties up all the belts. So if you're the boxer, you're now thinking, well, you know, all the belts are with one guy. I've only got one chance. You know, that guy's only going to fight one person at one time. How do I make myself that person that he's going to fight?
I'm just saying, like, for Golden Boy, and maybe they've tried, I don't know. I would reach out to Eddie Hearn, Matt Trum, and tell him, like, hey, Conor, Ben, Virgil, what do you guys think? Let's do it. Maybe New York, you know, obviously Texas could work, but... Because Crawford, I mean, what a flex that would be if Crawford says, like, no, I'll fight Virgil. I'll give him a title shot before the Spence fight, and I'll show you guys. And Crawford, you know, gets the win, stops Virgil or whatever. But imagine what a wrench would be in those plans if Virgil gets the upset over Crawford, if it happens. We're talking fantasy here, which from a business sense, it's 99% it's not going to happen. Imagine Virgil beats Crawford, and then... maybe there's a rematch clause, so Crawford gets again. But what if there's not? Imagine how the world spins. Virgil Ortiz for suspense for all the belts. You never know.
I would love Crawford to do something like that because I just feel that, you know, until he fights, you know, Spence and stuff like that, like his resume at 147 is kind of weak. And I mean, I'm not saying he's a good fighter. He's a good fighter before people start slating me for that.
No. Yeah. We know what you mean. We've talked about this before. He's an excellent fighter, but, and I think I've said this on the record, and some people are obviously this whole pound for pound talk, people get pretty upset over, but in terms of pound for pound, I've always rated Spence higher than Crawford because I rate the resume of opponents, and Spence has fought all the killers, Garcia, Porter, Ugas now, which we'll touch on a little later. He went across the pond to take the belt from Kell Brook, you know, a couple, you know, 6-7 years or whatever, how many years ago.
Beat Chris Van Heerden as well.
Yeah, that one doesn't count. But I'm talking about like resume. Yeah, like Crawford's right there. And I'm not saying that, you know, if you kind of just look at them from skill, that Crawford might not be better than him, but you got, I'm all, you know, how I look at it, I look at the resume of opponent, you know, and it's not like Spence, like, you know, went to a decision, a boring decision with each of these people or something. Like, they were hard fights. they were hard fights. And I know Crawford, people were like, oh, well, Crawford knocked out Porter and Spence couldn't even knock out Porter. Like, okay. But Spence still won that fight and he knocked him down. Porter's a hard guy to stop, you know? And I mean, would it have been any different if Porter had fought Crawford before fighting like Danny Garcia or Spence, you know, Keith Thurman and stuff like that? You know, by the time he got Crawford, he got in there with Crawford. I'm not saying that Porter, I'm not, you know, taking away from the win. I think Crawford, that's the best win he has so far. But I mean, Porter had a lot of mileage on himself at that point. But you can never tell. You can never tell because he fights his heart out. So yeah, I don't know. Crawford Ortiz won't happen before the Spence fight. Crawford's going to try to get a fight in between to keep that Spence fight alive, because I'd be surprised. But honestly, though, Crawford strikes me as the guy like, I'll fight Ortiz before. And Crawford would be the favorite against Ortiz. He would. He would definitely be the favorite. But I don't think it's likely to happen. So give me Conor Benn, Virgil Ortiz in the meantime, later this year. Give it to me. What else are we going to get? Give it to me. And I think that'd be a great, great fight.
I think that'd be unbelievable entertaining fight. I'm sure we'll see Conor Benn, Victor Ortiz, or...
Oh, that's ridiculous. It'll
be something like that. I'm sure they're going to keep doing that when he's doing, you know, good numbers. And
right.
I think he only did like 6,000, something like that, at the Manchester Arena. But, you know,
it's something.
Yeah, I mean, he's a London guy or an Australian guy, like doing 6,000 in the Manchester Arena. So, you know, that's still good going, right?
Right. Yeah, it is what it is. But also on the card, Chris Billum-Smith gets the eighth round KO, over Tommy McCarthy. This was for the European cruiserweight title. What'd you think about Billum-Smith's performance?
If I remember rightly, I think I picked Billum-Smith by KO this time. You know, he's not the most flamboyant of fighters. He kind of really relies on, you know, just the simple things, you know, like a good jab, good backhand, a good hook. Tommy McCarthy, he's very hot and cold. Like, I've seen some of his fights when he was coming through and I was like, you know, he's a bit sluggish. But then at other times, he looks really good. I don't know whether it's a confidence thing or something like that. Maybe he gets into his own head. But yeah, he blows really hot and cold. But yeah, Chris Billum-Smith, he's getting better, I thought. Good fight for him, really. And, you know, from somebody that kind of started boxing, you know, very late on and stuff like that, to have gone through and, you know, picked up the titles he has done. He's doing really good under McGuigan. And yeah, the moving him in the right way, you know, just slowly but surely, like area, English, British. You know, now he's picked up the European. Just, you know, slowly but surely, he'll get there, right? You know, and if he manages to pick up, you know, some kind of cruiserweight world title eventually, you know, later down the line, you know, he's in there with Okoli, right?
Right.
He's in his gym. So he's, you know, the world champion in that division. So who better to learn from and, you know, pick up rounds with than somebody that's the cruiserweight champion that's eventually going to move up to heavyweight and, you know, vacate those. And, you know, he may be eligible to pick up the vacant title.
Yeah, that seems kind of likely. You never know. Rounding off the card, Alicia Bumgardner gets the unanimous decision win over Edith Soledad Matisse. And this is for the WBC, IBO, and IBO super featherweight world titles. I'm a fan of Bumgardner. A fan. What do you think?
Love her. Honestly, one of my favorite fighters in the women's division. Her, I also pronounced her name wrong. Tanisha Estrada. Did I say it right?
Yeah, we're close. Were close.
Yeah, those two are probably my favorites to watch. They just have a good, you know, good style. You know, and with Bumgardner, you have that thing like we've touched on before. You can't turn away because she's good. She knows she's kind of cocky in there. You know, she's got some power. So you kind of think to yourself, okay, like I can't, you know, turn away because at any moment she might knock her out and you don't want to miss it.
Right.
I kind of wish that she had, you know, got Matisse out of there. I think maybe with, you know, 3-minute round, she would have worn her down a little bit more, because by the time the round's kind of warmed up, it's coming to a close, you know,
because right.
there's just not much time in there. You got a third of the fight missing by you missing 1 minute on every single round. So good, though. Hopefully she gets what she wants. And I know that she's been talking about fighting Choi next and then hopefully fighting Michaela Mayer for all of the titles.
Oh, if yeah. She's been banging the drum for that fight.
Yeah, but in a recent interview, Bumgarner was saying that there is talk of Michaela Mayer moving up. So hopefully, maybe Mayer's got, you know, one or two fights left in her. And, you know, hopefully Bumgarner isn't, we're getting undisputed in the super feather.
That's possible. That is possible. Moving on from AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, on Showtime pay-per-view, Errol Spence Jr. gets the 10th round stoppage over Yordanis Ugas. Errol Spence is now the unified WBC, WBA, and IBF welterweight world champion. I think Spence went in as a favorite from the betting odds. It's crazy to Spence is like a machine, if you think about it. He's went through all these issues and, you know, eye, orbital bone or whatever. For his eye injury and then the car accident, all this stuff, and people are like, oh, that's definitely gonna affect him. And then he comes back out, especially after a long layoff like this one was, it's like he didn't miss a beat. And the stamina the guy has, the stamina, he never stops coming forward. And especially his body shots. I'm a big fan, you know, I'm a big fan of the body shots, and he's attacking that body. And there was a couple, you know, there's a couple moments where Ugas got caught him with some good stuff. There was a moment, you tell me, you give me your take on this too, where the referee, I forgot his name, but he wasn't that great. It looked like, I think Spence's mouthpiece came out or something like that. Ugas got him with a shot, and then the referee kind of like semi jumped in or said something to kind of halt the action. And then Ugas kind of stopped, but then he saw that the referee kind of backed off. So Ugas, I believe it was like a straight right to Spence, and Spence fell into the ropes and bounced back off. But then Spence kept, you know, fighting. And I think that was a referee's fault, but because technically there was no timeout, because it looked like he like changed his mind midway and he's like, oh, never mind. So it was his fault. But I think that should have been counted a knockdown, because technically he did fall into the ropes and there was no official timeout, right?
He fell into the ropes, but I think it's, you know, if it's a knockdown, if the ropes kept him up.
They did. If you look at how he fell into him, if the ropes weren't there, he would have fell.
I'd have to watch it again. I thought he kind of like more like rebounded off him. Like he kind of went back into him.
No, his knees like bent. They buckled and he went down. Like his body kind of went. It lowered.
I'd have to watch it again. But I saw that clip was doing its rounds on Twitter, wasn't it? Because they were saying like, oh, this fight's fixed. The usual Twitterati were out there, you know.
No. I'm not going.
Because Ugas didn't jump in and finish him off.
But I think his mouthpiece came out. I think Spence's mouthpiece has came out, and then the referee, I'm assuming, noticed that and tried to halt the action, but then he like changed his mind. I don't know. It was really weird. Like that referee should be suspended after that. Like, how are you gonna, you know, I don't know. I don't know if anybody got any quotes from him after the fight, or he. Maybe not. I don't know. But I would love to hear his explanation for that specific moment, because it's just like, okay, well, why did you jump in to seemingly halt the action, and then you changed your mind? I wouldn't even tell him about the mouthpiece. I want to just see like if he says like, oh yeah, well, I saw the mouthpiece. And if he says I saw the mouthpiece, like, okay, so why did you let it continue if he had no mouthpiece? You jumped in, then you changed your mind. And if he just says like, oh, you know, I thought I saw something, but I didn't, so I just let the action continue. And then I found out after the fact that his mouthpiece was out. If he says that, like, okay, well, maybe that's the only plausible explanation I could see, you know, and that's the only thing I can think of.
No, I agree. It was just funny that the way that Twitter did the usual thing, and they're like, oh my God, this is fixed. Look at Ugas. He stuns Spence and he doesn't run in to finish him off. And I'm watching the clip and I'm thinking, well, yeah, the referee looked like he half jumped in. So Ugas is probably thinking, oh, we've got to stop. And then he realizes, oh no, the referee's not jumped in, you know, and like, yeah, it was the referee's fault.
It was a just total weird situation, but I think that referee really, really, what's the word I'm looking for? He really, pretty much pushed the speed of that whole situation really fast because he jumped in, and I mean, you can see the fighters kind of like, oh, okay. And like, and then he backs off, and then Ugas is just like, okay, you backed off, I'm going to go for it. And Spence, same thing, kind of how he turns around. People thought he was stunned, but that's what he says. And I can believe it, because if you look at the video, like, okay, well, they're both, all three of them are right next to each other. He can hear the referee. So I thought it was a strange situation, but it was totally the referee's fault. I think the referee really, really contributed heavily to that whole situation. But because there was no official timeout, I do think that should have been a knockdown for Ugas. But at the end of the day, it didn't matter, to take Adrian Broner's saying at the end of the day, or Floyd Mayweather's saying. It didn't matter because Spence closed up that, I believe it was his right eye, Ugas' right eye, and he closed it really, really bad, to the point where the ringside physician had to stop the fight. You see Ugas was upset, but hey, man, I agree with that stoppage. His eye was closed. His eye was ridiculously closed. You couldn't see anything. He couldn't see.
Where would you put that performance in terms of Spence's resume? Would you say that's a better performance than his Sean Porter, Mikey Garcia, and then Kell Brook?
I rate the Sean Porter one probably above those, because that was a tough fight. That was a real tough fight. And even the knockdown that when he knocked down Sean Porter, it was like a flash knockdown, because they were like in the moment of exchanging, and Spence just beat him to the punch.
Might have won in the fight, that.
What happened?
That might have won in the fight.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what a lot of people say. So I put his win against Sean Porter. That's his number one. That was a tough fight. That was a tough fight. Danny Garcia was tough too, but I think Sean Porter was the toughest up until this point. If you want to look at the stats, I know we kind of scrutinized the stats a couple weeks ago when Sky had different stats and CompuBox has different stats. You know, if you take it with a grain of salt after something like that, because we don't know what's going on. But if you want to look at the stats, Spence overall outlanded Ugas by a lot. I don't have him handily with me, but you know, Spence's work rate, I guess, if you want to use that term, was a lot heavier. And like I go back to my original point at the beginning of this conversation, Spence's endurance and stamina, he's literally on one speed throughout the whole fight, and he never stops. And you know, he's a killer, man. He's a killer. And I think we had talked about last week, I was like, okay, you know, Spence has been proving every fight, especially after his accidents and his situations, that he's still the guy. He's still the best, arguably the best fighter in that division. And, you know, arguably top two or three pound for pound. You never know. And I said, okay, you know, obviously everybody judges a fighter based on their last performance. Hey, man, I think he definitely still kept that dream alive of a highly, highly competitive and strategic fight against Crawford after this Ugas win. I think he definitely kept that flame. Just, he threw more gas on that flame.
Who would you favor? We get our dream and we get Spence Crawford in what we're in now.
April, you know what? Summer. I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm telling you, before the Spence fight, I think after Crawford's last fight, when he beat Porter and all that stuff, I think I favored Crawford a slight. But before that Crawford-Porter fight, I was favoring Spence. And I was like, okay, like I keep going back and forth with these guys. And now after this fight, I mean, that's a 50-50 fight. I think you talk about 50-50 fights, legitimate 50-50 fights in boxing at the highest level in this sport. There's nothing higher than Spence and Crawford at this moment. There's nothing higher in terms of in terms of boxing skill versus boxing skill?
Let me dream a little, because this won't happen, but in a perfect world it would, right? So, you know, Spence goes 29th fights Crawford for all the marbles at 147. Spence wins, moves up to 154, first fight Charlo.
I could see that. Yeah. Either way, Crawford and Spence, I think, would both move up.
Crawford would be small at 154, though, wouldn't he?
Yeah, but he's already said, he's like, I'll move up. He's willing to move up. I think 154 is his ceiling. Like, he could still make a lot of noise at 154, but after that, it's over.
I do wonder if Spence would be better at 154.
Spence could make it to middleweight. Spence can make it to middleweight.
Spence is older than you think, isn't he?
I think he's like 32 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always think he's younger.
Crawford's like 36, I think.
Yeah, 34. It's around there.
I think he's like 35, 36. I think. Something like that. But I'm telling you, man, like, I'm glad that Spence called him out after the fight. He finally said, you know, Crawford, you're next. I'm going for it. And then now Spence has been posting online, like, a lot of these, like, little marketing, like, graphics of, you know, of a shark, you know, the big fish and stuff like that. And then putting Terrence Crawford's initials, like, on a door, like, he's next, and this, and that. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. I'd be surprised if he does it. Like I said, the only question is if Crawford has an interim fight between now and possibly the fall of this year. Because ideally, the fall of this year is when a Spence Crawford fight would probably happen. Ideally,
you think he's going to want or just a fight in between? Do you think PBC will want?
Crawford's going to have to bite the bullet. He's going to have to look at Al Haymon, PBC. They're going to lock him in on a multi-fight deal like Top Rank did to Devin Haney. There's no way.
Do you think we'll get, if we get Crawford Spence, we get two?
Yes. Actually, 50-50. I think it's a 50-50 chance, because I think Spence is technically the bigger guy in a way. I mean, it's not that crazy difference, but I think Spence might be like, hey, I got to this point. I beat all your guys. I'm going to win this fight. Or maybe even if he loses, I don't know. Maybe Spence is a competitor. But Spence could say, hey, I'm going to move up to 154 regardless after this. But Spence is going to be he's never going to say like, oh yeah, even if I lose. He's not going to say that. He's too prideful. He's going to be like, oh, I'm not going to lose. I'm going to win. I took over this division, and then I'm going to go take over 154. So
I'd like to see it.
I think it's 50-50 on a rematch clause, but I honestly, I can see it. I can see a rematch clause. I don't think it's 50-50. I think it's like 75-25 that there is a rematch clause. And they lock Crawford down for additional fights under the PBC banner. 154, maybe 147. I can see it.
I think the only thing now, in my opinion, I think is,
maybe Crawford fights Thurman first before he fights Spence.
I think the only thing that may delay it or put it off even happening is just their demands. Like, where are they going to get $12 million from for that fight? Do you think
you're right?
Pay per views or?
But honestly, though, I think that they're at the point now, especially after Spence has been posting on social media where he posted about Crawford after the fight. He was like, "It's time to be legendary now." Mm. Where they know this is a legacy fight. They'll get paid, but they know this is a legacy fight. It's a huge legacy fight for both of them.
So 70 bucks a pop, right? What, 200,000 pay-per-views was what, 14 million,
I think,
right?
I think it'll be 80 bucks.
Okay. So
It'll be 75 or 80 bucks for sure.
They need what, at least 200,000? That clears what, 18 million, 16 million, right?
I think that fight does... $500.
They could The money's there then, right?
I think it does 500,000 bucks.
The money's there then.
Yeah, I think it does 500,000 bucks. So yeah, I think at this point, like I said, they're fighting for legacy now, especially based off of Spence's post. So they're gonna find ways to get paid, but they might have to make some sacrifices financially to just get the fight to happen, because they're like, hey, we're the two best in the world, especially at this division or whatever. We're gonna make it happen. This is legendary.
40-40, winner takes the last 20.
You never know. If it's anybody who does that, it's those two. But remember, before this, Spence was always just the guy, like, he's like, yeah, he's like, no, I'm a bigger draw than he is. Stadiums, pay-per-view, that was always a business thing. If he wants to fight me, he has to accept this, and that.
Three belts versus one.
But look at it this way. That's when Terrence Crawford was with Top Rank, and they knew, PBC and Al Heyman knew, you know, we're speculating, obviously, they knew that, okay, well, Top Rank is going to have to get a cut too. But there's no more Top Rank. Crawford's alone. So does PBC keep all that money that they wouldn't have to share? So maybe that changes the circumstances. So either way, the question mark is, does Crawford have an interim bout in between? Because I'd be surprised if he does not fight between now and the fall, which when I would expect this fight to happen. I'd be surprised.
Maybe a little gimme.
Yeah, but
I don't see it being anything big. Maybe just a little.
Hey, man.
Hey, welcome to PBC. This is what I do. Like,
imagine the balls on him if he does Virgil Ortiz. He's like, hey, Golden Boy, let's do it. The Zone.
I'd love that. I'd love if he just went on a killing spree towards the end of his career. And he's like, you know what? Like, I'm going to show you guys, and just like went killer after killer after killer after killer.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It'd be unreal.
I think it's a straight 50-50 fight. As of right now, today, that's a 50-50 fight.
I'd love to see who opens up as the betting favorite on that.
Oof. This is a straight 50-50 fight.
We can dream, right?
Unless Crawford has an interim bout between and he just doesn't look good and it alters the betting odds. As of right now, 50-50 fight. Those dudes are killers, man. Those dudes are killers. Moving on, another welterweight battle for the WBA welterweight title. I don't know why WBA and PBC, how do you say his name is?
I think it's Stanionis.
Iamantas Stanionis gets the split decision over Raza Butiav. This is for the WBA welterweight regular title, probably. What happened to taking away the regular titles? Was that just smoke and mirrors? Come on. But obviously they're setting up this co-main event, another welterweight, like it happens a lot with promoters and fights, have welterweights there to possibly be there. And then it's also like, if, let's just say they were too close to the fight and Ugas or Spence pulled out, they put one of those guys in the main event. But I, you know, they're trying to coordinate Stanionis to kind of get to that point. You know, maybe Stanionis fights a Danny Garcia, maybe a Sean Porter, maybe a Keith Thurman, or
he's good.
Yeah. No, he's got talent.
Yeah, he's good. Has a good good win. I'm not too sure where that random scorecard came from that had Butiev winning like convincingly. That seemed kind of odd. But Stanionis, yeah, he looked good. I think he's definitely one that's kind of like flown under the radar for a while. You know, he had some good performances on his way up, but you were always like, he's just kind of beating those guys convincingly. He should be doing that. But yeah, he's doing it on a bigger platform. So yeah, he's sneaking his way up the ladder.
Yeah, big time. Big time. Also on the card, Cody Crowley remains undefeated at 21-0 with the 10-round unanimous decision win over Josecito Lopez, the Riverside Rocky. And then also Isaac Cruz returns after his hard-fought loss against Gervonta Tank Davis, and he gets the 5th round TKO over the legendary Uriokis Gamboa. This was for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Lightweight title. It was a brutal knockout for Gamboa. I know people are just like, oh my God, what a brutal knockout. I think Cruz did what he had to do in terms of knocking him out, because Gamboa is just, they're really just putting him out there as a showcase for the opponent.
It's not nice though now. It's got to the point now where you just...
But whose fault is it though? Is it Gamboa's for saying yes, or is it the promoters?
The problem is you don't know what it's like, do you? Like, he's come from another country. Like, did he sign some absolutely atrocious management deal that he's been losing, you know, 30% of every single paycheck, and you know, all the hangers-on have been taking stuff. Maybe he needs to. Maybe you know, that's, you know, moving to America and coming over here, he kind of cornered himself and they've taken advantage of him. I don't know. But whoever's in his corner and keeps agreeing to all of these fights, it's not good to watch, dude. It's not at all.
No, definitely not.
How many times has he been dropped in his last like 3 or 4 fights?
He needs to retire, man. It's getting way too dangerous from the medical perspective. Like, but you never know, man. Crazier things have happened. He could be back out, and it's been PBC who's been putting him out there every single time. But he is, you know, hopefully it doesn't end too badly here. But yeah, I think he needs to hang him up. You know, he's had a good career and he's made some decent money. You know, it's time. It's definitely time. Rounding off the card, Jose Valenzuela remains undefeated as well with the first round knockout. Here's another one over Francisco El Bandido Vargas. Here's another one, man. Vargas and Gamboa need to ride off into the sunset together, man. Vargas. Vargas has been in some wars.
I just thought Gamboa, Linares, old school WWE I Quit match. Whoever loses has to retire.
A Gamboa Linares fight? Didn't they fight before? Or maybe I'm wrong.
We spoke about it before.
We did?
Yeah, on the show, yeah.
Ugh.
When Linares lost that fight in Dubai.
You know what? Maybe you're sucking me right back into it. I don't know. But yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't... No, don't get me started with that. I don't want to see that. Gamboa needs to... It's over, man. It's over. I think, you know, he had a good career. He was in some big fights, but... You never know, like you said, maybe it's a money issue.
Loser leaves town. Linares Gamboa.
Imagine that. Hey, man, if they kind of go WWE style like that, I'm in. I am in. Moving on, fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 23rd of April, from Wembley Stadium in London, England, on ESPN pay-per-view in the United States and BT Sport pay-per-view in the UK. Tyson Fury, the WBC and Ring Magazine champion of the world, goes up against Dillian White. So I've seen some criticism about this fight, that like the marketing and the promotion isn't going that great. I mean, I don't know how it is in the UK, especially since Dillian White isn't really participating. I feel like that's his way to stick it to Tyson Fury and all that stuff.
I mean, tickets wise, it's done.
Oh yeah, 94. I mean,
94,000 ticket wise, but obviously some of those are going to be, you know, be resells because
I can't believe they're charging pay per view in the United States.
Well, we spoke about that the other week, didn't we? Like,
and they're charging like $70.
And what did you say? It doesn't even do 50,000, right?
It's not. Well, it's not. I don't. It's not. Like,
well, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon during the middle of baseball season.
Exactly. And the basketball playoffs are on too as well over here in the United States. I'm telling you, charging $70, but maybe they looked at it from a business perspective, the broadcasters, and said, well, if we put it on ESPN Plus for free in the United States, we're going to have a lot of people internationally and probably a lot in the UK who are going to use VPNs, virtual private networks, to watch that fight and watch the ESPN Plus feed. So they're like, oh yeah, well, we can get it for free. I have a VPN. Maybe that's how they look at it. So like, okay, well, we might as well make a pay-per-view. So we put an extra couple layers of security walls, I guess. And they're like, hey, and we get $70 a pop for however many people buy it. So, I mean, they have to, Tyson Fury is getting paid what, 30 million and 32 million or something. And Dillian White's getting paid like eight or something like that.
Yeah, so 20% to the winner.
It's a lot of money, 40 something million. That was You know, that's a ton of money. That's a ton of money. And it's not, we're not in the era anymore of Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. The digital world has really taken over. So there's not a lot of people out there who are making, who are putting up numbers like Floyd Mayweather was, or Manny Pacquiao was, from the pay-per-view standpoint. So
not even close.
And these purses are still high. So, you know, where do you break even, and how do you, you need, I mean, like today I texted you, I saw that they were charging to get into the weigh-in at the Fury, Dillian White, weigh-in in the UK. And I was like, I asked you, I was like, do they always charge to get into the weigh-in over there? And you said, no, it's always free, but they're trying to make their money somehow. They're trying to make money wherever they can, because they have to pay $40 million just to the two guys in the main event.
They didn't even charge for the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather weigh-in.
And they could have charged for that too. They could have.
Yeah, it was just first come, first serve.
People would have paid for that.
Yeah,
that's crazy, man. That's crazy. I think Fury takes it. I don't think Fury's. Well, I think Fury wins a decision. I think, and people are going to say, oh, well, Fury should be a different guy, especially after he fought Wilder. I think Wilder brought out the best in Fury in all those three fights, especially in that last fight. Fury really showed, like, I can knock you out. People think you're the knockout artist. I'm going to stop you. But I think that Wilder really brought out the best in Tyson Fury. And I don't think Dillian White is going to bring out that type of Tyson Fury that we saw against Deontay Wilder. I think it's going to be a decision. I think it's going to be a unanimous decision for Fury. And we move on from there. What do you think?
I agree. I think Fury wins by decision. But I might put a little caveat on that. Unless Dillian White, because we've seen him before, you know, have some stamina issues. Unless Dillian White just punches himself silly and kind of gets stopped that way. You know, just pure exhaustion. He gets knocked down multiple times and he kind of just finishes because he's just, you know, punched himself silly, trying to win the fight. You know, it's just intriguing. Do we see the Tyson Fury of old? Do we see a boxer? Or do we see Tyson Fury try to bully the bully like he did with Deontay Wilder?
I don't expect to see that. I think Wilder just really tapped into a different Tyson Fury. And Dillian White, I don't think is going to bring out that Tyson Fury. He's going to bring out the boxer Tyson Fury.
Is that because of Wilder was a bully, but he was light, whereas White's a bully, but he's bigger? Do you think that Fury just thinks he's not going to be able to kind of push him around?
I mean, possibly. I'm sure there's a mixture of that. But I just think the Wilder-Fury, especially because they had the trilogies and then how they went back and forth and, you know, in the media and the press conferences they had and stuff like that, it was just a different dynamic. It was just a different dynamic. And obviously it doesn't help that Dillian White didn't show up for a lot of these press conferences. That was his way of protesting. I think he's not showing up for this press conference either this week or something like that. I don't think. And then with the Kinahan news dropping, you know, Fury's had to take questions from that and stuff like that. Like, yeah, it's not. Fury's going to outbox him for 12 rounds and we're going to get a decision. That's what I think.
And he restated today to Talk Sport, and I think I retweeted it on the on our Twitter handle, that he's going to retire.
No, I don't believe it.
Do you think it's just one of those, he retires and then in a blaze of glory, like, oh my God, Tyson Fury's back. He's going to fight AJ.
If AJ beats Usyk, Fury comes back for a fight against AJ, for sure, 100%. In Wembley Stadium or wherever, for sure, 100%. If Usyk beats AJ, it's a higher chance, higher likely chance that Fury, even though I still don't think it's going to happen, it's a higher likely chance that he stays retired.
Or do you think it's an option where maybe the pre-sale buys of the pay-per-view isn't doing great? So he's telling people like, hey, Because I noticed today he was saying, hey,
yeah,
this is
he's
your
a
last
salesman. He's yeah, a salesman.
This is your last chance to see.
Yeah.
I think he was calling himself GK, Gypsy King.
Yeah. He's a salesman. He knows. He knows what he's doing. It, you know what? That's possible. Maybe they're not trending well. Mm. Maybe it's not trending well. We don't know. I mean, they reportedly sold 94,000-something tickets, so it's going to be packed there. So that's trending well. But from a TV perspective, yeah,
they're behind the anticipated buys.
Maybe. Yeah. So, and he's a salesman. He knows how to talk. He knows what to say. Like, I mean, that's why I think the last time is the third fight against Wilder. He was saying he was master buying like 6 times a day or something like that. You know, like just certain things he throws in there just to kind of keep the tornado moving, I guess, at faster speeds. So,
leaving a two fight deal against AJ for the, you know, the Battle of Britain or whatever they decide to call it later down. It's what, 100 million on the table if he retires and doesn't come back? Like,
I don't know. But even then, though, like maybe if Usyk wins, I don't know how Fury doesn't look at it like, man, I have a chance to be undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. And then I retire once I do that.
Well, he claims that he's already done it, right? Separately.
I mean, I guess, but I don't know, especially with Spence Crawford happening this year. I'm sure he's going to see that and be like, man, what a legacy fight that is. And maybe he's going to be like, hey, I'll fight the winner. He obviously prefers Anthony Joshua from a business perspective. Huge, huge over there. But if it's Usyk, maybe Fury's going to look at it. Well, it's still a chance to be undisputed. And if, like I said, going back to my original point, AJ wins in the rematch. Fury doesn't retire, not at all. Usyk wins, higher chance that Fury might retire, even though I still, it's just a marketing tactic, but he stays retired. But it's still a really solid chance that he comes back because there's a chance to be undisputed to fight the other guy who has all the belts.
Fury wins 32-0, won pretty much every single title you can, including Ring Magazine and the mythical lineal title, retires with a weak resume.
I don't know.
Never fought AJ, never fought Pulev, never fought Povetkin. Who else was a big guy around that time?
He's hoping that AJ wins. He's hoping that AJ wins. I'm telling you, the blockbuster business that fight could make over there is huge. It is huge. Even if they did it in Vegas over here, obviously the pay-per-view market wouldn't be as great, but all the UK fans would fly over for that.
I think he's tailor-made for Tyson as well, AJ.
Yeah.
I think it's an easy win for him, honestly. Yeah.
But it's a bit blockbuster business.
Oh, yeah.
Huge. Huge. And it could break records in pay-per-view over there too, if they fought over there. I could see it break records.
It would be massive. Especially if it's, like you say, if somehow, some way AJ beats Usyk and it's for all the marbles in the heavyweight division, that would be, it would probably wouldn't end up in the UK though, would it?
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, but we'll see how it turns out this weekend. And, you know, $40 million for both fighters, shared between both fighters. And it's a lot of money to make up. A lot of money. Also on the card, Isaac Lowe, 21-1-3, goes up against Nick Ball, 14-0. Isaac Lowe's been on the show before, I think once or twice. So shout out to Isaac Lowe. Good luck to him. I know he's kind of a part of a Tyson Fury's camp, right?
Yeah, he's the one and only fighter that Tyson Fury kind of promotes. He has his own little banner. He's just really good friends with Tyson, and, you know, quite often fights on his undercards.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that's put into Tyson Fury's contract. It's like, hey, I get to put one of my guys on there. So I get it. News and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Quickly, we wanted to give a shout out to Four Corners Boxing, with the Twitter account Four Corners Boxing, for always sharing our stuff and interacting with our stuff online. We know they're an avid listener of our stuff. So we definitely appreciate you, Four Corners Boxing, whoever you are, whoever you are, we definitely appreciate it. And also, we've gotten a couple requests, a couple direct messages from some fans in Scotland to get Al Dawson back of the Insiders. So to talk about, you know, Daniel Kinahan, obviously there's been a lot of developing news. Tyson Fury has been getting a lot of questions about it. He's kind of been not really answering the question, distancing himself, I guess, in a way. And then there's reports that Eurosport has severed ties with ProBellum for their broadcast deal. I think the ProBellum event that was happening this week, at the end of the week, has been canceled. And there's a lot of people who were, I guess, involved with MTK, MTK Global, who have now kind of taken that MTK logo or MTK hashtag off of their social media profile bios and all that stuff. And then I think there's a reporter, I think his name is it Steve Mulhausen? I think he works within DAZN or something like that. He reported today that MTK Global, or he reported this week actually, that MTK Global is no more. I haven't seen, as of this recording, I haven't seen anything further, but he did report that MTK Global is no more, which wouldn't really surprise me. They just lost their CEO, Bob Yalen. He stepped down. But then you mentioned that he went to ProBellum, right?
Yeah, he stepped down from MTK, and then ProBellum announced, like, welcome Bob Yalen. So
yeah, so
it's, I mean, it wasn't
that's not fishy at all.
Well, no, and if you also look at a lot of people that were kind of signed to MTK originally were kind of moving over to ProBellum anyway for like management contracts and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, if MTK disappeared,
do you think it's a way, like, maybe they saw, like, okay, MTK has been getting too much heat, so let's just change the name.
Yeah,
it's still the same system, but let's just change the name and transfer over everybody. It's like businesses, how here in the United States, if you can, if a business has really bad Yelp reviews or something, they'll just move to another space, or they'll just change the name of that space. Like if it's like, you know, Mike's Tacos or something like that, and you get a lot of bad Yelp reviews, you know, thousands and thousands, or Google reviews, and it's affecting your business. And then you just change your names to like Taco Mania or something like that. It's the same system. You're using the same ingredients, everything, but you're just changing the name. So when people search, or when they drive by, or when they see Taco Mania or something, like, oh, it's something new. It's not Mike's Taco. So maybe that's how it is. They're like, hey, it's, everything's the same. We're just changing the name. You know, we're getting rid of MTK Global because there's just too much heat, especially now with the Kinahan sanctions and $5 million bounty. Like, that's huge, man. That is really huge. That is ridiculously huge. I mean, I think it's a matter of time before he gets caught. I mean, I don't know. I know Dubai has, like, their extradition process is pretty light. They don't really do it. But, you know, when the U.S. government steps in like that and puts something officially in writing like that, that's, now it's become extremely serious. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. And like we said, shout out to Al Dawson. We'll get him on soon. I know we've been messaging with him to get back on, and a couple fans have reached out to us to get him back on. Shout out to him for staying on those stories. I think he was just recently in UFC too, and he asked a question to a UFC fighter who shouted out Daniel Kinahan. And Al Dawson was right there asking him in the post-fight press conference about it. You know, shout out to him, man. You know, he's pressing it and he stays on it. But, you know, and it's an interesting story, especially after today, or after the last week or two, with the developments that have happened, with the sanctions and stuff. It's a crazy story, man. It's a crazy story. And it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds, especially with all this kind of collapsing with MTK and them transferring to ProBellum, and ProBellum reportedly losing their deal with, is it Eurosport? Don't they have somebody else too? Or is it just Eurosport?
I think it was Eurosport in the UK, and then there may have been somewhere else in like the rest of Europe. So yeah, it's it's interesting to see. And it was funny that Al posted today, I saw on Twitter, that a lot of people were kind of saying like, hey, you know, after you put that fighter under so much pressure, I bet the UFC ban you. So he put on today, like, hey, just so everybody knows, you know, UFC have approved my credential for the next event.
So, right.
It's good to see that you kind of, you get that freedom of the press, because we,
well, maybe, right? I think if the fighter he was questioning was a lot bigger, maybe like a Conor McGregor or John Jones, you know, somebody was had a lot more pull, maybe it could have been unfortunately different, you know. Luckily, everything's okay. He's still getting access and stuff. But at the end of the day, UFC, you know, they'll, just like any promoter, they'll blacklist you if they don't like your, you know, your questioning or your tone.
Ariel Helwani.
Well, yeah, that too. But yeah, if you don't get in line, it kind of happens in boxing too. It happens in boxing. So it is what it is. And then also, Juan Francisco Estrada and Joshua Franco now have, I guess, an expected promoter for their ordered fight. BoxingScene.com reported that Golden Boy Promotions obtained promotional rights to the Estrada-Franco WBA junior bantamweight title clash. Golden Boy submitted the minimum amount bid of $120,000 and was the lone bidder during the process, during the purse bid that was held this week. We talked about this a little bit off air. I think it's a strategic move. I think it's a way to get Estrada to drop the belt and maybe have Franco either get the belt, get granted the belt, or fight for the vacant belt. Because Estrada still has a chance to fight Chocolatito Gonzalez for more money. So you mentioned you were surprised that the Eddie Hearn and Matchroom didn't jump in and make a bid. Well, technically, Golden Boy, Matchroom still have relationships with DAZN. So maybe they talked. Because technically, and I say this in quotation marks, technically, the promoters and all the people putting in a bid for fights, when it goes to purse bid, they don't really know. They're not supposed to know who the other bidders are. They're not supposed to know. And I'm saying that in quotation marks. But maybe Eddie Hearn, Matchroom, and DAZN told Golden Boy, hey, we're not going to bid on this fight. Just take it. You know, just take it. We want to make the Estrada Chocolatito fight. Estrada will likely vacate so we can make that fight on Matchroom DAZN. And then that's the deal that they made with Golden Boy. And then they told Golden Boy, and Franco gets Estrada's title. I could see that.
I could see it, because I think an Estrada Chocolatito fight for, you know, even for no belt, is still going to be a lot of money, right?
Yeah, put it in LA. People,
yeah, I mean, how many people want to see it? It's just surprising, isn't it? Like, how, you know, $120,000 for a WBA world title fight for two people in that division. You know, how many times have we spoken about, you know, those lightweight divisions don't get, you know, the kind of money that probably people assume they get. I'm assuming that, you know, if you turn around and said like, hey, that guy's a boxer and he's a world champion, most people would be like, oh dude, he's living like Floyd, you know, like,
You think, you hear world champion and yeah. You hear money.
Yeah. It's
it's different though.
No, it's just, you know, if you're in certain weight divisions, they just attract, you know, money, right? If you're a welterweight or a heavyweight, yeah, you're getting some good paychecks.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, that was interesting. But I'd be surprised if this fight actually goes through for that amount of money. I don't really expect that at all. But you also did a bonus episode this week that will be uploaded separately in addition to this week's episode of our standard previews and reviews of fights and news and notes. You did a bonus episode with Victor Morales Jr., who is actually commentating on a Fantasy Springs card for Golden Boy sometime this week, right?
Yeah, Victor's commentating on Thursday at Fantasy Springs, which I think it's Joel Diaz Jr. against Mestito Hester. Which is a good, you know, local fight, I guess, for us guys. He's right. Then going to be fighting at Fantasy Springs again in May. And then he said he hopes to fight, you know, a few more times this year. And we kind of go through, you know, how he started boxing and stuff like that. You know, he had a very, you know, successful amateur career, turning pro, all the different coaches that have helped him, people that he's sparred with, and then, you know, what he likes to get up to, you know, outside of boxing. So it's a good, like, I think it's about 20, 25 minutes of an interview.
Yeah. So if you have time, check that interview out with Victor Morales Jr. Like I said, he's supposed to be on the commentating team or doing some type of commentary duties on the Fantasy Springs card for Golden Boy later this week. But once again, as we cross the finish line here, Mike, go ahead and let our listeners and followers know where to find us and follow us.
We're at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to join us next week. We'll be obviously reviewing the big Tyson Fury Dillian White fight if Dillian shows up, and then also be previewing Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano, your favorite Jesse Vargas and Liam Smith, and then also Oscar Valdez, Shakur Stevenson, and hopefully I will be in Vegas for that fight.
Sweet. Yeah, that's definitely this next month and a half, got a lot of great fights coming up, a lot of great fights coming up. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round.